Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about Uber's FinTech strategy, some big VC deals going on in Mexico, and some interesting insights from CB Insights on the consumer bank of the future. Please hit subscribe to keep up with these and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get going. With me this week is Steve.
Hello, John. How are you?
And if you have Steve, you know that that's enough.
That's all you need is just one Steve. So, John, what's going on in the fintech world this week? It's been a while since we met.
Yeah, it has been a while and a lot's gone on. But the trend of non-financial companies jumping in and providing traditional financial services
continues unabated.
Yeah, we've seen more and more of this trend where non-financial companies, almost any tech company actually has a good in providing financial services these days.
From Apple to Facebook to Google, they all do it, right?
Exactly. Birds do it, bees do it, and now Uber's doing it. They announced back in September that they were coming out with Uber Money, which would provide some basic but very vital and necessary and in a lot of cases helpful financial services for their drivers and their partners. And the reason this is kind of interesting is because Uber is definitely not, a traditional fintech and certainly not any kind of a traditional financial services company, but with all the partners, all the fintechs that are out there, and the willingness of big companies, big financial companies to partner now. The culture has changed so much that they can kind of cobble together, much like any large company, if it makes sense for them, with APIs, with things like connectivity, with other existing services, to appear like a financial services company.
So what exactly is Uber? Is this a product for their drivers or us, the riders?
Right, exactly. So they can do things that you couldn't do before without the kind of connectivity and technology that you had before. And some of that is their drivers are exactly, well, but more or less the target market of the underserved financial customer.
The underserved, underbanked, regular income, freelance worker type people, right? Sort of that segment.
Yeah, exactly. And in a couple of ways, which I'll point out. One of the things that Uber mentioned just recently as an update on their new offerings is that 60% of Uber drivers go negative on their accounts six times a month.
On their bank account.
They're negative on their bank account.
That is horrendous.
Six times a month.
So does that mean
60%. So more than half of them have this problem. And so they have issues with cash flow, which is one of those freelance gig economy kind of issues, right?
Which, by the way, companies like Uber have helped create, by the way, this whole issue.
And well, yeah, problem. No, yeah. Right. Yeah. They're one of them, sure. Yeah. Like Airbnb and all of this.
DoorDash, all of them, yeah.
Yeah. What's a handyman one?
Handy?
Handy? Is that one?
Is it Handy? There's a few of them.
Fiverr, I think is.
Fiverr is a freelance, like digital type workers, but there's one that I've used that IKEA purchased, TaskRabbit.
TaskRabbit,
that's
right. Yeah, that's a very catchy name that I forgot.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in order to help, they're waiving overdraft fees and they're working with BlackRock. Again, they can partner and cobble together these services. Looking at how to motivate their drivers to save, so offering them more of the nudges and that kind of thing.
So they're creating a PFM for their drivers. They're creating a tool that will help the drivers stay on top of their finances.
It sounds like more and more it's becoming that, right? It's a very focused one on their particular needs. Also, another interesting fact with Uber drivers is that that some Uber drivers send up to 25% of their income back to their home countries.
That is fascinating. So there's actually a whole cadre of foreign-born Uber drivers who are just using their earnings to send remittances back home.
Exactly. Maybe. And who has an international presence with finances and treasury all over the world.
Sounds like Uber or Western Union, but could be Uber.
Yeah, well, Uber has that international presence, so it kind of lends itself to providing that remittance service for their drivers. So they're already operating in so many countries.
So the new Uber Money will have a remittance feature in the app as well?
Well, that's one of the things they're talking about down the line.
That's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, so it would be directly through the driver app. They said they're working on having the amount paid right after every trip, instead of waiting for weekly or cashing through instant pay.
So I've heard about this concept of you know, getting paid after you finish a ride. And I think it's great from a rider's perspective, but I wonder for Uber as a company, right? I'm assuming that they make
the
some
driver's perspective.
From the driver's perspective, mm-hmm. perspective is great. It's a great service. But for Uber as a company, I wonder whether having losing access to that float will actually impact their finances bottom line. Because they're, you know, before, if you get paid maybe once a week or every 2 weeks, you can maybe use some money to just do something with it, get some interest.
Like
or
Uber could use it. That's the whole idea is they're not coming at it from a financial services perspective. So as a banker or an insurance company, you absolutely are. And if you're Charles Schwab, let's say,
yeah,
you're absolutely counting on that float.
You love that float, baby.
Yeah, yeah. But this kind of a cobbled together financial fintech company doesn't care about that. For now, at least. Maybe down the line, they'll see that.
It just seems like this could add to their
They might start charging for it or something like that down the line.
Yeah, maybe.
Everything's free at the beginning. Remember ordering a Snickers bar from Webvan at like 2 in the morning?
Right.
And some guy, that's got to cost them like $50 to give you this. But after a while, when it doesn't make sense, they have to show profits.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. And Uber is well beyond having to show profits.
They are for better or worse.
For now, and maybe it never becomes a part of their business plan to make money the same way that a financial institution would. And you know, for other reasons, they might keep their drivers for longer. Motivation.
I actually see this more
compensation.
Yeah. I see this as a good way to, because basically most drivers who drive for Uber also drive for Lyft, and I see this as a way to kind of differentiate
their
service.
Yeah, instead absolutely. Of actually having to pay them.
Yeah, they right. can just say, hey, we have an Ifty app for you. Just use this and stay with Uber. Don't go with Lyft.
Right, right. And another partnership is to put together all these pieces is with a Green Dot. For debit account services. We've seen like Square being able to do loans with their merchants because they see all the cash flow coming through.
Yep.
Uber can do something similar. And that's something else they brought up. They could do microloans because
they
know
loan.
They know how much their Uber drivers are making and what kind of volatility in their cash flows and make an appropriate lending decision.
That sounds actually like a pretty smart idea. I wonder how soon after this was announced, Lyft was like, we got to get on this, guys. We got to build a similar tool for this.
Yeah, I'm sure. If that starts to pull away drivers or as a threat to, then sure. I mean, this is a pretty, these are all pretty big efforts in and of themselves.
They are,
so
yeah.
They would have to put a lot of resources on it. All these partnerships, all the systems in place. That's not trivial.
Yeah.
But Uber's showed no hesitation to lose money, so
they continue to do so. Although they are getting punished by the market, of course.
Their stock price is definitely below the IPO price, right?
Are you kidding me? It's like 40% down since they went public. Yeah.
Oh man, and the WeWork thing definitely is no help.
I think that will be the death knell to all future tech IPOs for sure.
Yeah, yeah. The private companies waiting, and these recently. Still money losing with no end in sight kind of companies. So Uber's kind of in a good place. They're benefiting from the rise of the gig economy. Like you said, they're a big part of that. And the other trend is what I love this term. I've never heard this before, headless banking.
Ooh, headless banking.
So that's another thing they bring up in this article. This is actually Forbes saved me this week.
Mm, nice.
Both of my articles are from Forbes. So a headless banking is where the service is just integrated into some other service, as a consumer offering, or mm-hmm. is the back end to something that you see online. Let's say some reg tech compliance function going on when you apply for a loan or something like that.
Very cool.
So it's it's performing a banking service without like its own brand and all that.
Got it.
So Uber is kind of plugging into that as well. Or literally plugging that into their driver apps, right?
Right.
So there's a couple of particular characteristics of the gig economy worker that they point out in this article, and which is a target market for a lot of fintechs out there, as well as large companies. It's inconsistent and or unpredictable income patterns, the need for credit, and a big one that I thought about before, health and insurance needs, which you might take for granted, but once you leave your company, you're going to regret
making those. You're going to notice it.
You're going to notice that payment. Yeah,
you would notice that.
Yeah. And also number four are tax requirements. So Uber is exactly targeting those kinds of needs that their drivers have. And I wonder if Uber would start offering these kind of things for other type of gig workers beyond their drivers someday.
I think if they build a robust enough platform, it makes sense for them to maybe license this to other players for sure.
Yeah, Uber is like the underlying or becomes the brand. And someday that'll be the main source of their income.
Right.
It'll be like Amazon. Remember they just used to sell books?
Just books, yeah.
And now no one thinks of them. And now maybe Uber will be like, oh, that banking company, right?
Yeah, I get
my loan through them.
Yeah.
And remember they were just the car thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. So something like that. They say that 1 in 5 Uber drivers, in addition to driving for Uber, have other gig economy jobs as well.
So mostly Lyft, right?
Yeah, I wonder if that counts. We have to check back into that poll. So these just some other information on these rideshare drivers. Half of them are 30 to 49 years old. This seems to be the sweet spot. Third are African American or of Hispanic heritage,
mm-hmm.
and nearly 4 in 10 Uber drivers rely on Uber for the bulk of their income, but not all of it.
That's so, highly depressing.
Yeah, highly depressing.
Yes.
You mean because of the pay that they end up making from?
Well, I just think that if you derive most of your income from Uber, you're probably not doing all that well, because study after study has shown that essentially being an Uber driver is not, I think it's almost equivalent to being a minimum wage worker.
Yeah, that's right.
If that.
It's tough. So a lot of interesting things in this article about the gig economy, about headless banking, about the partnerships and APIs that we've mentioned before. That's a big trend, and it's kind of coming to fruition in Uber Money, putting together so many of these things. But these aren't the only trends that are going on in the world of consumer banking, right?
They're not. No, it's actually what we're seeing. This is really interesting. So when the whole fintech explosion happened maybe 5-8 years ago or so, there was a lot of very narrow use cases. You had your micro investing, you had your PFM, you had your Credit Karma.
I use Square for this.
Exactly.
I use...
It was all single-use apps and services, right? Now we're seeing sort of a trend in the reverse where everyone's kind of bundling things together. So there's a rather famous, at least in my office, a famous graph or chart by CB Insights.
Very, very famous.
Very, very famous.
At least in my office.
At least in my office, yes.
Okay.
Called The Unbundling of the Bank, where kind of highlighted how a bank could be disintermediated by having, you know, somebody give you personal loans, credit cards, right? As opposed to going to one place, you have a lot of small players doing that. Now things are moving again kind of in the opposite direction. So there's a really fascinating article that came out from CB Insights just a few days ago that kind of highlights how all these players are kind of building out their offerings and becoming almost like full service banks. And I'll go through the list here.
They're so good at coming up with these, identifying these trends and getting into the details of how it makes sense and where they're coming from on this. So by the end, I'm always convinced of whatever thesis they're
coming out with. I will buy it, whatever you're selling. I'll buy it.
Well, there's so many factoids in each article. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they analyzed 25 companies sort of in the broadly defined fintech space. And like we've all noticed, they came up with 3 or 4 key themes. The first one is debit card. So it seems like everyone now has a card, right? I have a Wealthfront account, and I keep getting mentions about how they're going to launch a new debit card in the future.
Everyone it's has not a, even used anymore.
It's not even
you
used.
You don't yeah. have yeah. a debit card? Yeah. That's the
exactly.
article.
How dare you? Yeah. Venmo has one. Betterment, Wealthfront, they all have the same thing, right? PayPal, I think, has one. So they're seeing how a lot of these players, you know, and the companies can range from Lending Club to Money Lion to Marcus and Credit Karma. I'm just going down the list here. Dave, of course, and Manso. They're all getting into the debit card issuing game, which is pretty interesting.
I haven't heard of Dave before. Do you know much about them?
Dave, yeah. So I think that actually the name will tell you that. Dave is basically David versus Goliath. It's like a smaller bank.
Although, of course, that is so hipster cool.
Super hipster cool. But it's basically an app that will help you save and become more financially healthy.
Okay. So yeah. like the Acorns kind of competitor?
Acorns is more investing, right? Or saving, sorry. It's more about, you know, roundups and savings and stuff. This is more about managing your whole financial life.
Okay, so more comprehensive.
More comprehensive, yeah.
Because if you're going to be Goliath,
you better have
your A game.
You better have your game nice stones. I don't know, something.
Okay.
Or rather, yeah.
You got to have stones, right?
You got to have stones, yeah. But this article says that basically debit cards are the new frontier for, again, that rebundling or that breaking out of new products and services in the fintech space. The second one is actually kind of related. It's high yield savings. And we've all seen this, right?
This is going to be one of the offerings.
I know, it used to be.
Yeah. The way rates are going these days.
I know. I realized that I have an online high yield savings account from Amex, and they actually have a much lower rate than I thought. I thought it was
they're dropping two, but
it was like much less.
Well, we've had two rate cuts in the past two quarters or so.
So that will definitely impact. I think that the companies are kind of fighting a dual dynamic here. One is that they're putting upward pressure on rates for the big players, right? Because they have to remain competitive. And the other is that they're also getting squeezed on the bottom because, again, the lower rates imposed by the Fed. So if you're a big player in the space, not really.
We have high yield savings. Compared to your Chase account, exactly.
It's not all that great. The other one, actually, which is something that companies like Square and Revolut have done, is actually stock trading. So, you know, I think it'll begin with Robinhood.
Oh, including it as an offering, you mean?
As an offering within your services. So we're all aware of Robinhood and the success they've had in doing that. Although, full disclosure, never ever trade individual stocks. It's a sucker's game. But everyone's doing this now. They can offer free or very low cost stock trading. So this is becoming sort of table stakes for all the fintechs now, is that they have to offer this thing as well.
Okay. So now a broker dealer used to be like a big deal, like a thing. You would call and you say, I have E.F. Hutton. And, you know, rich people's kind of thing. And now stock trading is going to be like, along with your free toaster and savings account, and here, trade anything you want for free in the world. It's like the promise of the internet.
It is kind of a thing to happen, isn't it? It is.
Someday you'll have the whole world's knowledge. Yeah. You'll be able to trade anything.
Yep.
Wow.
And we're even seeing players like Schwab. Schwab eliminated fees for stock trading now.
And then everybody did
because they have to follow suit, right? So Vanguard, Fidelity, they all did it. So this is kind of making its way now to the more, you know, cash strapped.
I think there was that one week where every day there was some new announcement of somebody removing all their trading fees.
Most
of their fees.
Which makes sense, yeah. But again, now you can use your free stock trading function in your app to buy all the Uber shares you want.
Yes, yeah.
Which, by the way, is not a sound investment, but
lose your money, but at least I didn't pay any fees.
At least it was free, yeah. Right. I remember that my experience with Robinhood is that I bought some Ryanair shares.
The Ryanair story.
And then you've heard it before, right? I ended up losing like 20% and just said, screw this, I'm not doing this anymore.
Oh, yeah. I had so much Enron stock because the fee was only $9.99 to trade.
All the WeWork that I bought in the private markets, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So stock trading is going to be one of the table stakes.
Yeah, it's prevalent now in the Cash App, in Revolut, in N26, and Monzo. They're all doing
it's going to be one of those things where, like, well, I don't actually use it, but if you know, I want if everybody has it, and maybe if I do need it, it should be there.
It'll if you
want
to buy a micro share of like an Apple stock,
yeah, or then everybody will market against you saying you don't have this basic thing.
Exactly, we offer a full suite of services. So yeah, but essentially the three things that are coming together to kind of create the small full service fintech app space are the stock trading, the high yield savings, and of course, last but not least, the debit cards.
Ah, okay. Well, that's that takes care of almost everybody's needs. What about loans?
Loans is the big one. It's not on there, but I think of loans as something that's more transactional. So you mentioned loans as part of the Uber Money thing. I think that makes sense. But I think that a company would have to have access to your cash flow and your transaction data.
Those companies have an advantage.
They would definitely do that. So it's basically Square for individuals.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing they point out is like Amazon does the same thing too. I didn't know Amazon did lending based on the cash flows too.
Huh. They lend to sellers, absolutely, based on their transaction. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. Everyone's lending, everyone's loaning, everyone's giving you a high yield savings account.
Okay, that's the end of the show then, I guess. Well, there is more. There's more to the story, and that is what's going on outside of the United States. Mexico is right next door, and did you know that they have a higher GDP per capita on a purchasing parity power basis mm-hmm. than China.
Whoa, fascinating. Did not know that. Yeah.
Actually, they have in nominal terms as well, a little bit higher than China or very close, but China's growing faster. They may have just passed them yesterday or something like that.
It's also a tiny fraction of the Chinese.
But on PPP, purchasing parity power, Mexico is still higher than on a per capita basis than China.
Awesome.
The advantage China has is that their population is 10 times as big as Mexico's. So anyways, Mexico, because of, they have some decent income and their proximity to the U.S., of course, and a market that's definitely underserved, but can take advantage of investments because of their solid market fundamentals, the companies that can grow, consumer market that's there. The SoftBank announced back in March of 2019.
So pre-WeWork poop show.
Pre-WeWork
poop show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Say it five times. There at home, that they would invest $5 billion to invest in technology startups across Latin America. Actually, because they've recognized that there's this potential growth that's definitely underinvested in. So companies like Payclip, which is Mexico's leading online payment processor by number of clients,
excellent,
got $20 million. There's an online on-demand delivery startup called Rappi in Colombia. They got $1 billion. Rappi.
Rápido.
Is that the first part of Rápido?
I'm assuming it is.
I guess. Yeah, sounds right. So, they got a little investment of $1 billion out of SoftBank.
Wait, they got $1 billion?
Yeah.
Or the Revel got $1 billion?
Yeah, $1 billion.
Wow. Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah. I had to double check my facts there. But
It's funny because that's actually a little tangent here, but that's actually one of the key points of, spoiler alert, Silicon Valley this season, is that they get a $1 billion offer to invest $1 billion in their company, and that's seen as a massive amount. So I can't believe that this startup that I hadn't heard of in Colombia raised $1 billion.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess they're a lot bigger than, they're a lot further along. Obviously, they're not just a startup.
Just a startup, yeah. So they're bigger than Pied Piper.
Apparently, yeah. Yeah, because they got their money earlier than Pied Piper. The writers of the show weren't ready for this.
Yes.
So how is this new season, by the way?
It's okay. I feel like it was, they kind of peaked in season one, or arguably
one.
That's
pretty early.
I know. Well,
how many seasons are there? Three or
five? I think four
five.
Or five.
Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. It's actually this is the last season.
I've never seen the show.
The first season is worth watching for all the typical Silicon Valley BS that you see.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah.
All right, so I watch season one and the last season,
and then leave it from there. Yeah, that's my lukewarm, endorsement.
Send all your hate emails to Steve, addressed to Steve.
Yes.
So so Mexico and Latin America is a vibrant market, attracting a lot of money for sure. Probably losing some of SoftBank's money because I'm absolutely positive SoftBank hasn't done their due diligence everywhere. Not just on WeWork. It just seems they're just spreading their money everywhere.
Tossing money around, yes.
Yeah.
Like it's confetti.
Like it's confetti, exactly. I wish I'd gotten some of that confetti.
I know.
Yeah. Well. So guess when the last IPO in Mexico was?
Q1 of this year.
Actually, September of 2017.
Jesus Christ.
That's a long time, right?
2+ years, yeah.
Yeah, it's about time. And, at least in the fintech space, what's been holding the IPO market back in Mexico has been all the private equity money that's been coming in. So they're like, well, if we can grow without all of the,
the scrutiny and the
scrutiny, due diligence, the public reporting, all of that, which, of course, we see in the U.S. as well.
Yeah.
Companies avoiding staying out and growing bigger as long as they can. Sometimes too long in the case of Wee Company, which missed the boat.
They certainly did. And in the process, they burned, $20 billion in investor money? Absolutely.
Yeah. And they went from a valuation of
47?
To down to 8 at best.
Eight at best.
So.
By the way, I suspected the same thing would also happen for Palantir. I think Palantir is grossly overvalued.
You
heard it here first, yeah. They're going to lose
a quarter of their value. All your Palantir employees, get your spoiled eggs ready.
Yeah.
So a lot of companies in Mexico are thinking the same way or having the same kind of issues where they're holding back, they're getting money from and more attention now from private equity investors. Another investment from SoftBank is in a company called Konfio, K-O-N-F-I-O. We mentioned another company called Credit Justo here a while ago that Goldman Sachs put some money to, $100 million credit facility, actually. So that kind of gets you through not having to go to the public markets ahead of your time when this kind of money is coming your way. A lot of opportunity out there if you're Spanish-speaking or Latin American-friendly fintech. There's a market there for you.
Head south, young man.
Head south, young man. The west is
screw go
way
west.
Overpriced.
Screw go west. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
Go south.
All right. And now we're ready for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the fascinating story that Steve will tell us about.
So my final bite is $5.1 billion.
Did you say billion?
I said billion.
Oh, man.
That is the amount in the first half of 2019 that investors put into fintech companies in Europe.
So the first half, Q1, Q2.
Q1, Q2,
5.1 billion.
Okay. Billion dollars. And that actually is notable because it actually exceeds the investment in Asia, which has traditionally been sort of the second place where money goes after the U.S.
What's driving that change? Well, first of all, that's surprising. That's the first time that Europe would have passed Asia.
I think it actually had to do with the decline in investments in Asia more than anything else, and in the U.S. as well. So it's not like they're actually getting that much money. It's just that there's been a broad drawdown of funds being put into the U.S. and Asia recently. So Europe is benefiting from having fewer options for investors. What's your number, John?
My final bite is 20, as in $20 an hour. That is the minimum wage starting in the first part of 2021 at Bank of America.
That's pretty awesome. It's well above the federal minimum wage standard, right?
Well above. Isn't the federal $7.25?
Yeah.
That's pretty low. So, $20 is even above what other banks have said that they were going to increase their minimum wage to.
It's also above like some city imposed limits. Like Seattle has $18 maybe?
Something like
and,
that.
And New York,
and
I think
they're going up every
15.
Year. They have a plan. A lot of these cities are going up over the next up to 2024, up to $18 to $20 an hour.
Right.
But Bank of America is doing it pretty much now, between now and the end of the first quarter, they said they'll get everybody up to $20 an hour.
So I have a cynical question. Does this mean that they will increase the minimum wage for everyone at the staff, but maybe everyone at the branches, but maybe rely more on contractors to get around that? That could be a nice end.
You know, I don't know if that would be great for their reputation risk.
It's a bank. They have no reputation. It's a big bank.
Yeah, I don't know. But it, you know, certainly gives them an advantage in hiring, right?
It's true. Yeah.
If you could just do $20, if you can do that and just get free wire transfers as an employee, then there's no need to work for Uber.
Yeah.
At all. Yeah, all these financial benefits. I just go to the bank and
just be a teller
and get at least $20 an hour. You could get more just with your first raise or promotion pretty quick.
That's awesome. Go be a bank.
So just to say, the big players are still keeping it competitive out there in more ways than one, not just technology, and they want to pull that talent towards them. The other banks, I think they're mostly at $15 an hour.
They're in that range at $15, $17 an hour.
If you live in a state where you have the federal minimum wage, that's like double, more than double the federal minimum wage. You should be getting pretty decent people there.
You should be, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And if you're Bank of America, then la-ti-da to you, Mr. Banker Man.
Mr. Moneybags.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news. And thanks for listening.
Bye for now.